This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
We now break it down even deeper as far as the ACC is concerned with our man Seth Greenberg. And Coach joins us right now. Coach, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How was your weekend?
It was okay. Not great. It was just okay.
Just okay. Now, why that? I got a question, Pat. Pat, a man that lives the life that you live.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, in your little cave.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the difference between just okay and like great?
Well, this wasn't okay. This right here, hitting one of 30 numbers. That thing was a waste of time. So I lost out on $950 million there. I also lost.
Well, you had a real shot at winning that pack.
Hey, no, wait a minute. I had a positive attitude and at least a $20 bill. And so I was in it. And then I had I got into the real estate business on Friday and didn't even know it. People were calling me up about a house that was for sale because some idiot at a real estate company put the wrong phone number on the for sale and it was my number when I had nothing to do with it. So I lost out on 5% of who knows, maybe another $1 million home there. So I kind of felt like I really lost out on some serious coin this weekend. Coach, never leaving the house. Never left the house and felt like I left about $1 billion on the table. You know what I mean?
Wes, his life is miserable.
It is. It is. It really is. I mean, Seth, I mean, this is like, it's just a matter of, I mean, you can set your watch to it. It's going to happen at some point in the first 3 hours of the day. We start this show at 7, and by 10, there'll be a positive and there'll be a negative. You know that. Come on, man.
I mean, you might as well coach, Pac. I mean, if you're going to be miserable, I'd be happily miserable and coach.
You know, I'm not saying I had a bad weekend, but Mike Krzyzewski wanted me to come hang out with him at the house. That's how tough my weekend was. All right? That's how tough it was. Brad Brownell said, Pack, could you come down here and make me feel better about my life? That's what Brad Brownell said to me this weekend.
There we go.
That's where we are.
I can understand that. I don't understand, and maybe I'm way off, but I do not understand all the uproar over Coach K. I really don't.
Thank you.
And here's my thing. I mean, you just lost a tough game. I know he makes $8 million. We've all been in that situation. But, I mean, I actually think his heart was in the right place. It wasn't that big a thing. I mean, don't you guys think – you guys aren't like this. But don't you think sometimes, number one – and I'm not saying this young kid was doing this – that some members of the media will ask a question to poke the bear. Now, I don't think this young kid was doing that. I think he was asking a question, and I had no problem with the question. But I really didn't have, it wasn't a big deal, the answer. I mean, look, Coach was hurt. They lost a tough game. They had a chance to win. They made a little progress. They were playing better. They played harder for longer periods of time. They couldn't guard Carlique Jones and keep him out of the lane. We'll get to that later. But I think he was just trying to put it into context, and because of maybe previous situations, look, when you got to step up there right after a game, I don't think it was that big a deal. I mean, it's created this incredible story. Like, I don't understand. Let me ask you two guys. You guys are career media guys. All right? I mean, career. Mm-hmm. All right? You get the best seats. You get fed at halftime. You get fed before the game. But if anyone ever goes back at someone or anyone says anything in a negative manner back at a member of the media, they lose their minds. But if members of the media poke coaches or say the derogatory things about their teams or their players or their decisions or everything else, and it's no big deal. That's just part of the job. So I don't get it. I mean, do I think that it could have been handled in a different way to an 18-year-old who's an economics major, now that we know he's an economics major? Sure. I mean, it could have been. It's something that happened in a moment, but it wasn't as mean spirited as everyone's making it out to be. And I just don't get it, because I do know that I've read a lot of mean spirited articles, but if you go back at anyone at a high level in the media, it's sacrilegious.
I think there's a couple different.
Go ahead, Wes.
Go ahead, Pac.
Your turn.
No, your turn.
I think that let's do this first. Jay Piazza, I think, is a young man's name who is a reporter for the Duke Chronicle, which is the student newspaper, and the post-game Zoom call, he asked Mike Krzyzewski the following question.
Hi, Coach. I'm just curious as to what the next step forward here is for the team as you guys move into another week of basketball.
Yeah, why don't we just evaluate this game? You know, I'm not into what our next step forward is right now. We just finished the hard-fought game. Yeah, I don't know if – like when you, what's your major? What's your major at Duke? What's your hardest class?
Econ.
Okay. So say you just had the toughest econ test in the world. And when you walked out, somebody asked you, what's your next step? You see what I mean? Does that, you have some empathy and you know, just give us time to evaluate this game, and then we'll figure out, just like we always try to do.
I don't see anything mean-spirited there.
Well, first of all, a couple things.
A little snarky, but not mean-spirited. A
couple things. Number one, I have seen people berated at a press conference. I've seen it. Mm-hmm. That was not berating someone. I mean,
that's correct.
I'll be honest with you. When this happened, I mean, I didn't see it live. I wasn't on the Zoom. But when I saw it on social media and it was like, oh, Coach K loses his cool, I was like, oh, Lord. I had already prepared myself when I hit play what I thought I was going to see. And I saw that clip. And when it ended, I was like, well, did they leave something out? Because, I mean, that's my initial reaction was, wait a minute. First of all, a student, and that, well, it didn't matter if it was a student journalist. It didn't matter if it was a veteran grizzled vet. Hey, that's the question. Now, there are certain questions better than others. Yes, we've all been there. We've asked stupid questions. We've asked great questions. So the question was the question. I didn't think Kay belittled the student. The only thing correct. I was mad about is he used our material. The thing I didn't care for Kay was he went to our bread and butter, and that is to a student, what is the hardest class you've ever had at school X? So the fact that Kay went and took our materials, what really ticked me off about it, but he didn't berate anybody. And Coach, you've lived it. Hey, when it's a raw emotion, what's an incredible win or a tough loss, man, you're all over the place. I mean, sometimes, yeah. You know, if you ask the same question 24 hours later, you may get a totally different answer because you've had a chance to digest it all and figure it out. So I thought it was a lot to do about nothing, quite frankly, other than the fact I was ticked off at Kay for, again, using Packer and Durham material. And one other thing that bothered me is that your dissertation to start this whole segment was, hey, we've all been there. Hey, when you're making $8 million a year, well, you lost me at that point because none of us are making $8 million a year. So I'm mad at Kay for stealing our material, and I'm mad at you thinking that we're making $8 million a year. Other than that, I'd rather talk about the games.
The interesting thing to me is I used to go into a press conference after a game with a piece of paper that had three things I was going to say. No matter what I was asked, I was basically going to stay on point and kind of drum those three things. Now, you know, like, last game, the certifiably insane question that, you know, when I was at Virginia Tech. I mean, I didn't know I was going to say certifiably insane, but I was going to also, I knew I was going to protect our players and stand up for our players. And that's exactly what I wrote on a little piece of paper. I said, protect your guys. And certifiably insane came out. Or my last year when, you know, I think it was my last year, next to last year in the ACC tournament, someone asked me something. Basically, the question was just to get me to react. And at that point, after losing a bunch of close games, I made up my mind. I was going to react and stand up for what we accomplished over the course of the previous 8 years. But you guys know it, and you guys don't do it because that's not your style. But there are certain guys that have agendas in the media. This kid didn't have an agenda. There was nothing. I mean, you know, this guy's probably going to have a blog tomorrow after this. I mean, but. I don't think the kid. I didn't think it was a bad question. I thought it was a fine question. I think it was just in that moment of time. I think also on a Zoom call, it's that much more difficult because you really don't have that same type of interaction.
There's the difference.
Shoot.
There's the difference. That's the difference. See, these are all now happening in a unique environment. The question and answer concept, and we're kind of going off the hoops path here slightly, but the idea that all this is now being conducted in a very plastic and sterile environment, literally sterile, in the sense that, you know, you got the reporters sitting at home or sitting in their office or sitting in an arena looking at a screen trying to ask a question. I thought the question was fair. I thought the answer was fair in that he tried to use an analogy or an example to cite back to the young man from the Chronicle who was asking the question. It comes off as one way, but that's not what the intention of the question, probably not the intention of the answer was. He was just trying to answer the question that, hey, we're not really worried about what's going on next. We're more concerned about what caused the loss today to Louisville by 5 points. The other thing is this too, Seth, and I'm going to ask you about this. Last year we saw Roy Williams go through these heartbreak, frustrations, last-second losses, all these type things, and his frustration boiled over, but it boiled over in a public environment, right? The traditional press conference setting. Now we're seeing another incredibly successful coach go through some of these losses, and it's bubbling over in a different environment. The other thing, too, is Roy Williams a winner. Mike Krzyzewski clearly a winner. Now they had problems last year with Carolina. Duke's struggling now. People want to dig in on why that struggle is happening to the brand names, if you will. Same thing happened at the beginning of last year to Tony Bennett. Remember when he lost at home to South Carolina and lost a couple other games? Brand name struggle. People want to know why. I don't think the young man was prodding. I think Mike was trying to answer the question. And at the end of the day, people are just running. Paul Hewitt once told me people want to see the two-car crash. They don't want to be in it. They just want to see it. And a little bit of that is coming into play.
Yeah, and I think that, again, I think it is difficult, you know, in terms of the environment that we're living in and dealing with it. But, you know, I think it's water on the bridge. I mean, I know a lot, some people can say, you know, it's whether it was Roy last year or Mike this year, you know, these old guys, get off my lawn. Look, I mean, you lose a game. I mean, let's get to the game. I mean, I thought that Duke's inability, it was real simple, to guard Carly Jones off of any type of flat ball screen when Matthew Hurt was in the ball screen, you know, cost him a game. I said before the game, David Johnson and Carly Jones had to play well for Louisville to win. And Carly Jones was absolutely terrific. That, you know, Duke did not have an answer. I mean, just plain and simple, didn't have an answer. Could not keep him in a lane, keep him out of the lane. And then David Johnson's size at times and shot making at times. I mean, he had a nice line. I think he had 15 and 5 or 6 assists. I mean, I thought he did a nice job. I mean, that was the game. And you know, as a coach, you know, that's the puzzle that you're trying to solve. And they couldn't solve the puzzle. They couldn't keep Matt Elaine again in the zone. He attacked closeouts in the zone. He attacked closeouts in the man. And in the ball screen situations, he got anywhere he wanted. So, I mean, look, it was a hard-fought win for Louisville, but that's what they're going to have to clean up, because once you see their inability, especially with an explosive guard, not everyone's Carly Jones, to defend ball screens, Matthew Hurt's afraid to foul, so they're trying to string it out and level it off as opposed to blitz it or step out hard, because if you step out hard, people are going to go right at his hip and make him foul. That's the game. And the other thing is Duke can't make shots right now. So you take Matthew Hurt out of the equation, who I think shoots 47% from the three-point line, and the rest of the team is shooting under 30. So there it is in a nutshell. Got to make shots and got to guard the ball. And you know, that's as so. I mean, like Coach K could have said, you know, we got to clean up our ball screen defense. We got to guard the ball better, keep it in front. And then, you know, offensively, you know, we've got to have other guys step up and make shots. But, you know, it is what it is. I mean, we've all had those moments. I mean, and my thing is the kid, the question was fine. I have no problem with the question. It's not like he's the guy that's had an agenda to, you know, to create a reaction at a coach. Those are the questions that usually would elicit a different type of answer. But I didn't think the answer was that bad. I thought the game was a good game. It was a fun game to watch.
One quick thing for me, before we go to break, one quick thing. From a Louisville perspective, Coach, assuming they can get healthy, all right, with those guards, I mean, I think we kind of now put Florida State in they're a dangerous team in the tournament. Virginia is obviously playing good basketball, too. But Louisville's guards, right? You got to have great guards. You're going to make a run the dance. A healthy Louisville team with those guards, if I give you that scenario and they stay relatively healthy moving forward, could that be a team that makes a lot of noise come March?
You put Malik Williams in that thing and things change because he is a terrific defender. I mean, you watch, if you break down film and watch him in ball screen defense, if you watch him off the ball defensively, mm-hmm. talking and communicating with his team, that changes him significantly. There's no doubt about it. Jalen Withers is getting better, which is, you know, especially offensively, he's given him a lot of good minutes. So Dre Davis is playing better. I mean, he did some terrific things in his interior passing. So, yeah, if they get Williams back, they are a totally different team because they go from a pretty good pack line team to a really interesting team that could be a little bit disruptive, protect the rim, improve their ball screen defense, get a little offense out of him who could step out and put him in ball screens and pick and pop. So, yeah, I think they've really, really changed their DNA. So I think Louisville is good. And I said before the game, the pack line defense, one thing, if Louisville didn't turn it over, which they did a little bit in the first half, they didn't turn it over and they could set their defense. Matthew Hurt was terrific, but once they set their defense, they really forced other guys to make plays and Duke just didn't have those guys. So I do like Louisville.
All right. Sit tight when we come back. The team that survived on Saturday night against another team that might be emerging in the ACC. We're going to catch up with Coach Greenberg about the Virginia Cavaliers. And you know what the anniversary of today is?
Oh, send it home, Jerome!
Send it in, Jerome! Back after this on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
In Durham on a Monday. We got Coach Seth Greenberg joining us as usual.
Working on his real estate license.
Yeah. Speaking of.
He's going to be in the firm with us. He's going to join the firm. We're going to sell houses, condos, houses.
Do it.
It's going to be great.
I'm all for it.
I mean, the only way we're going to.
Mark Packer Group.
The only way we're going to get to $8 million a year, whatever Greenberg's over there talking about, is us getting in that real estate business. Tell you that right now. Wes, you pointed out that today marks kind of a cool anniversary for all college basketball fans.
Oh,
you kind of knew where you were when this happened, right?
Yeah, I was actually a senior at Mighty Elon when this happened. January 25th, 1988, Greenberg, roll the videotape from Mike Gorman and Bill Raftery's shining moment on the original Big Monday.
Burton, a little trouble. Now they loop it in the right, and nobody's home. Picked off by Miller. Gores ahead. Lane's on the other wing. He finds
it. Oh! 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 Yeah! Send it in, Jerome!
Classic.
The best. Archie Miller with the pass.
That's it?
Not Archie Miller.
No. It's wrong.
Sean Miller with the pass. Yeah, Sean Miller with the pass.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about that?
Where were you when you saw it, Seth? Where were you?
I was at Long Beach State at the time. Just went to Long Beach State that year. And I remember vividly watching that game because obviously I spent 3 years at Pitt. So I knew a lot of those guys in terms of not obviously Jerome, but I knew a lot of my friends. Actually, still to this day, a lot of my closest friends are guys I met at when I coached at Pitt. And like, I mean, it was like blowing up. I mean, the phones were blowing up everywhere. Did you see that? Well, I'm trying to coach my team, guys. But yeah, I did see it. And that was big time play.
You know where I was?
I was like, what? Yeah. Like you couldn't miss it. It was on every sports center humanly possible.
I, at the time of many hats, including my real estate deals, I was in Dale Brown's rented apartment in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, because I was a consultant at LSU at the time, in addition to doing radio at Clemson in Maryland. But I was at Dale Brown's rented apartment. That was my place of stay when I went down to Baton Rouge. How about that crazy?
That's pretty
story?
Good. That's a good memory. I tell you, you probably have a lot of better stories from your time at Dale Brown's rented apartment.
Thank you, Seth.
And let me tell you something. The first time I ever walked in the place, I said, "Pack, we're just going to let Coach Brown's got an apartment that he doesn't use. We'll let you stay there every time you come down. I said, that'd be great. And so they gave me the keys to the place. This is a true story. I walked in to Dale Brown's apartment, and there on the wall were heads of animals, and there was two bedrooms that were filled with the Freak Defense pamphlets that apparently he didn't sell or was shipping to China or places of, and I mean, there were millions of them. The Freak Defense, Dale Brown, the preacher man.
Oh, obviously, man. Obviously that wasn't on the New York Times bestseller list.
No,
they were going to be sent to China, Indonesia, and South America. How to play the Freak Defense by the preacher man, Dale Brown.
That's
there
it.
There you go.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Charlottesville, can we? Can we get to Saturday night in Charlottesville? For as good as Duke and Louisville was, Seth, I thought Georgia Tech, Virginia might have been the game of the day in the ACC. I thought this was well played. Both teams, both ends of the floor, comes down to single possession. And we know how good Virginia is. And I think Georgia Tech, off the pause, has played pretty daggone well, too.
Georgia Tech's growing on me. And it's the things they didn't do well last year, they're doing well now. They're taking much better care of the basketball. And their shot selection has improved incredibly. And I think that's been the difference in their game, quite honestly. It could be Usher, it could be Alvarado, it could be DeVoe. Those three guys are playing at a high level. Early on, I thought they really missed Banks defensively. They've kind of changed their defenses up a little bit. Now, I thought Virginia did a good job of attacking the defenses. But, I looked at Georgia Tech now as a more confident, more poised, more mature team that makes much better decisions. On the other hand, I look at Virginia, and look, Kia Clark didn't make a shot all game. He makes the biggest shot in the game. But I said this on game day, and I think it's really interesting. They went from mover blocker, ground and pound, Vince Lombardi, bam, smash mouth basketball, to this wide open, like Cliff Kingsbury, spread offense. And they're starting to get a pretty good feel for it right now. And they've added some different entries and some different actions out of it. Now, that wasn't their best game, but I think Georgia Tech kind of owns the tempo of the game as well. But I was impressed with Georgia Tech. They've got to keep on winning games. There's no doubt about it because of the losses they had early in the season. But they're going to have opportunities. And I think Virginia is really interesting. Two matchup nightmares, the way Huff and Hauser play, because they can post and play off the mid-post, or they can step out. Mm. They can curl off of those guys and replace them. They can also lift you up above the foul line, which opens up back doors. Their spacing right now and the feel for that five out, I call it read and react. I think it's been really, really interesting to watch. But that was a high-level, well-played basketball game by two teams that Georgia Tech, who's really improving, and Virginia, who, along with Florida State, it's mind-boggling. I want to see where Florida State is in the top 25 this week, because if they're not like between 10 and 7, the guys that vote are idiots.
Wow. Well, you're way above me.
I asked that question.
I said 15. 10 and 7.
I asked that question last hour.
Let me ask you this. The way they're beating people, I know they have the UCF loss, and I think that goes back to my routine and continuity. Without routine and continuity, because of the virus, you're going to have basically a lack of consistency. If they were Duke of Carolina and they were playing the way they're playing right now, where would they be rated? Like, if they were Duke and Carolina and they were playing the way they were last week, would they be rated? I mean, Duke's best win was Bellarmine, and they were rated in the top 25, and Florida State was nowhere to be seen.
Well, first of all, if they were Duke or Carolina, they would have been ranked. They would not have been unranked. That's the first point. The second point is, I don't think they will go from unranked to the top 10, but I do think they bust down the door in the top 20. But we'll find out where all that goes. Where I wanted to go with you, though, is I want to stay with Virginia. They get Syracuse tonight. I still remember Buddy Boeheim making that shot right in front of his dad in Charlottesville from about 38 feet out, where his dad was like, "That's a terrible shot. Great shot, son." And that was an amazing win last year for Syracuse. They played extremely well against Virginia Tech in a game they really had to win at home. What happens tonight with Virginia and the Orange?
Yeah, this is going to be a really high-level game. I really believe that. I think that a couple things. Virginia scores a little bit higher rate against man-to-man than zone because I think they're more comfortable. They see it more. This Syracuse team has more weapons than they've had in the past. And what I mean by that is Gary A is a really, really hard matchup. He gets to the offensive glass, number one. He can step out and shoot it, which makes it really hard to play against. Dolje is a really hard player to play against. Maybe one of the best blend players in the country. He can facilitate. He can rebound. He can initiate your fast break. They're a different Syracuse team because they're trying to play a little faster and play ahead of the defense, which has been interesting. Alan Griffin gives him a hardness and a toughness and a guy who rebounds out of the zone from out of his area, which is really important. It comes down to Joe Girard. I'm interested to see how much Jim plays Richmond because I think Richmond changes the zone. Richmond at the top of the zone distorts passing lanes, gets deflections, and gets some easy baskets. And I think if Richmond gets big minutes, as long as he can handle in the half court making good decisions against the pack line, I think Syracuse has got a real shot in this game.
Okay, Seth, real quick point on Virginia, though. Have the Cavaliers been in a ball game this year where if the other team is shooting it well, they can stand out there like the old Ty Jerome, Kyle Guy days and bang threes? Have we seen Virginia do that in this new five-out, you know, kind of offense they're running as opposed to the old days? Because Syracuse, the way they're shooting in the last two ball games, and again, I know it's a different night, Syracuse stands out there and knocks down threes. This thing could get pretty interesting pretty quick.
Yeah, I think this is the best offensive team that Tony's had, and it might be the best offensive team Tony's had, including the national championship team, by the way, the defending national champions. Yeah. They've got shot makers and floor gamers all over the floor. The ability to take Huff and pull him away from the basket, he's a three-point shooter. House is a three-point shooter. Murphy's a three-point shooter. Marcel's shooting it better. When Kihei picks his spots, he's a three-point shooter. I mean, they've got shot makers all over the floor, and they are passing the ball. I mean, they are passing the ball and getting the ball to people when they're open. But because the court is so spread against man, I'm interested to see how they spread the floor against the zone. And I think that's the biggest thing. And the two things, let's face it, you want to beat Syracuse, you get to the offensive glass, which is really, really important. And then, you know, Syracuse relies on turning people over. Those are their two things now. Virginia doesn't turn it over, but Virginia doesn't get to the offensive glass. So, I mean, watch those two areas. If Syracuse can turn Virginia over and keep them off the glass, then you know what? That's a huge advantage for Syracuse. If Syracuse can't turn them over, and Virginia does a little bit on the glass, which I'm not sure they will, obviously it's going to be a huge advantage for Virginia. So those are two things to watch. I also think where they're going to put Huff within the offense. Are they going to put him at, you know, run him? They're going to run some type of action. They're not going to be stationary where they move the ball and playing gaps. They're going to run people behind the defense. They're going to run multiple guys in the middle of that zone, which I think is really good. And I think, you know, Hauser in the middle of the zone, is going to be really hard because the one thing when you catch in the middle of the zone, if you put a guard in there, especially a small guard like Clark, all right, the zone swallows them up. But if you put a guy who can make a shot and see over the defense like Hauser, then all of a sudden the zone has a problem. So, I mean, you know, to me, whether it's Hauser or Trey Murphy, I think there's that right there is an example of how the offense lifts you by being above the free throw line. Here's against the zone. Watch, that's a little more stationary, but if you don't close out, they're going to knock down jumpers. But I think the versatility of Virginia's offense is really legit. I think they have enough shot makers, especially when you consider their two front court players step out and stretch the defense, where it gives them so much. It gives you so much versatility within your zone offense.
Seth, real quick, it's more of a statement than a question. Tony Bennett was on with us last week. I asked him that question specifically. I think this is your – is this your best offensive team? And maybe it's just because he's in the middle of a season. He dismissed that question almost instantly by rattling off his great offensive players that he's had, and he has had them. But I'm with you. I think this is their best offensive team. Now, he may not admit it till the season's over with, but they've gotten, like you said, more versatility, I think, to score on this club than anyone I can remember them ever having.
Yeah, they got to do it consistently. Right. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing. But, I mean, the only concern, like, Keye Clark is terrific. And when Keye Clark shots are down, he's even more effective, in my opinion. You know, he can't take it too deep. I think the one negative on Keye, and I love his game. I love his ability to defend. I love his ability to disrupt. I love his ability to advance pass. He's become a very good ball screen offensive player in terms of reading the off-ball defenders. When he takes it too deep, he gets swallowed up. And anyone that game plans is going to basically bluff and stay home and make him score. Because, you know, basically they don't think that he can beat you in the lane, especially if he's playing against size. And that enables you to stay home on those three-point shooters. When he tries to do too much, I don't think they're as good. And I think that's one of the reasons that Tony has lifted the offense even higher. Because by lifting it higher, now when he gets downhill, the help isn't there. So now it's easier for him to finish. If they were more traditional and they had more players below the free throw line, now the help is there, and now he has to score a little bit over length. Now, if you really do help and the offense is lifted higher, it's easy for him to read the help, redirect the ball, and those guys are shooting step in three. So it's different against the zone, but they will still try to penetrate against the zone. But I think this is Tony's. Now, it's early in the season. They've gotten so much better at the read and react five out, and they've created more pressure on the defense by these little simple actions that they're running out of it. People don't respect, like, and I say this every year, Tony Bennett would be a really good NBA coach because he is really creative. Mm. And people don't understand the creativity that they have within their offense. And the slight little, as a coach, you look at the slight little adjustments that they make within their offense, with their spacing, with their little actions that they have within the offense. He's a very creative offensive coach because they're so good defensively, and because of the pace they play at, people don't really see it.
There you go. Seth Greenberg with us on Mondays. Appreciate the time as always. Have a great day, coach.
Thanks, guys. Sell a couple of homes today, will you please?
Done. That's what we're here for.
Oh, man. Oh, the real estate story is going to go forever. All right. Don't forget, we got ACC basketball for you right here on ACC Network. Tomorrow night, we'll take you to Peterson Events Center in the Steel City. Pittsburgh coming off the loss in Winston-Salem welcomes Carolina. 7 o'clock start, Dave O'Brien and Corey Alexander will be Mike's side for the first meeting of the year between the Heels and the Panthers. Sit tight when we come back. Beyond the midway point of the Monday show, what was the best and what was the worst? All that's coming up next on Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Monday, as we normally do, we look back over the weekend and give you the best of and the worst of. And we always like to start on the positive foot. So with that said, Mr. Durham,
yeah,
let's go after the good things that happened this weekend in the ACC. And it started on Friday night because, you know, if it involves duels, you know we're going to go there. You know it.
Pat Papalizio's team delivered, didn't they? NC State, their 21st straight win. How about this? They get Pittsburgh on Friday night, Pack.
Yeah.
In the duels.
Had some upsets. And, again, for that poor Virginia Tech guy that kept tweeting us all weekend, man, people show up at your show, nothing good happens. Well, Coach Pat was on. And that didn't seem to be a problem for the Wolfpack wrestlers. They are really good. The league's good. Listen, you got four teams ranked in the top 15. NC State's in the top 5, and they're legit. Really, really good.
No, I'm with you on that. And, man, plenty of stars for the Wolfpack, too. They look like they'll be hard to beat in ACC wrestling. Speaking of 21 straight, it's not just NC State. It's the Noles, 21 straight ACC wins at home after Saturday's win against Clemson.
Yeah, only led by 38 at one point in time and put it in cruise control. I think Clemson scored the last 11 in the game to lose by 19. That's how good Florida State's playing. They have been out of sight since coming back from the pause.
Yeah, they have been tremendous. And of course, on Saturday, they got a little bit from everybody, to be honest with you. And Leonard Hamilton's team, man, they look really good. How about Ishmael Massoud Saturday night at the Joel in Winston-Salem? Isaiah Musius from earlier in the week in Chapel Hill, it was Massoud's turn to step outside the three-point line. 8 threes for Ishmael Massoud. 8. My goodness. Career high 31.
Deeks, man. They were going to get somebody. Unfortunately, Pitt, it was you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They were going to get somebody.
Yep. Yeah, it was just a matter of time, and tell you what, the win for Steve Forbes, really kind of a good way to validate the hard work they've done. Virginia wins another tight fit, and this is in best of the weekend because not was it just a two-point victory against Georgia Tech. They've won their last 9 ACC games decided by one possession. That pack... That's a stat right there that doesn't get nearly enough play.
Well, that's where you give Tony Bennett a lot of credit. To me, that's coaching and a team that understands who they are, championship DNA. They never panic, tons of poise. And if you're going to beat Virginia, you better jump them because if it's tight, they play more comfortably down the stretch. And that was the case. And again, Georgia Tech had a nice double-digit lead. You knew the Hoos would make a run, and it got tight. Virginia makes plays.
Well, and we talked about Ishmael Massoud going off the other night for Wake Forest. It also was a big night for Steve Forbes. Not only his first win of the year in the ACC, but it was his 300th career win for the first-year coach of the Deacs. And so congratulations to Coach Forbes.
And he'll
had
be
to
on
do a little
tomorrow.
Housework in the front yard. Yeah, he'll be coming. That's right. 9 o'clock tomorrow.
Yep.
We look forward to having Coach Forbes with us. He's always been great, and we look forward to talking to him after a big win for the Deacs on Saturday.
And I'll do my best to get that house sold, get to a bigger neighborhood in Winston-Salem. I know all the good places in my hometown, man. We'll upgrade that house for him. $750K.
Oh,
just give me a call. If you're interested in the Forbes home, just give me a call. You got my number.
What are you
Apparently
doing?
Everybody else does.
Oh, what are you doing? What are
the
you
world.
Doing? All right. Let's. How about ACC teams unbeaten on Saturday? Maybe I caused the Miami loss last night because I tweeted out late at night on Saturday. Home teams unbeaten at home on Saturday. In fact, home teams had won 11 in a row in conference play until last night when Notre Dame beat Miami at Coral Gables. Start looking down the line now. 34-16 are home teams in ACC play.
By the way, do you any mention of your dreaded announcer's curse after you put that on Twitter and then all of a sudden comes to a screeching halt?
Yeah, somebody got me back. Yeah. Yeah, somebody got me. Said it was my fault that Miami lost.
Yeah. See, I don't believe in that. I don't believe in any of that stuff. So I'm just saying, for folks out there that love it, get it all over you.
Yeah. So home teams do well. How about Amanda Butler and Clemson? This is a heck of a ball game yesterday.
Since dirt.
As part of our ACC women's triple header, they get their first win ever over Syracuse.
Since dirt.
Since dirt, as Packer says.
Yep, since dirt. I mean, up 25 at the half, and we go to overtime, right? I mean, it's a thrill a minute, man.
Yep.
You think that thing's a blowout, you better keep watching. Crazy stuff happens in ACC women's games.
Well, this is Kendall Spray ends up being the difference maker for Amanda Butler's team, who was playing without two starters as well. Dana Evans saves the day for Louisville.
Whew, I'd say.
You could say that yesterday in Winston-Salem.
What a play.
Yeah, game winner with 9 seconds left. She also finished with 25. Louisville wins 65-63 to remain number one in the country. It's a tough shot. Gina Conti doing a good job defending
here.
Yeah,
it was a great play. I mean, it was just a great play. Great play. Louisville stays number one. NC State stays number two. Thrillers yesterday on the ladies' side, both of them.
Week
both pushed.
Week from Monday, collision course with the Cards and Wolfpack. All right, Chris Mack's penmanship, best of the weekend? What do we got here?
Well, you know, again, you know, I love to write thank you notes. That's my thing. And some folks reciprocate. You're not forced to. But when you do, I always like to make acknowledge of it. So I got a nice card from Chris Mack. I appreciated him being on the show. And I'm going to just say I'm bragging about him because I would say of all the handwritten notes that we've had back, this is the best penmanship of any coach or athletic director that I have received. All right. So Chris Mack. And not only is the great penmanship spot on, almost it looks like calligraphy, but the lines are perfect. I know you can't tell, but I'm telling you, I was impressed. So Chris Mack, double thumbs up. Not only dangerous rolling toilet paper and getting coaches into cul-de-sac, but the penmanship outstanding and fresh off of knocking off Duke. Big weekend. Chris Mack gets a lot of love on the best of the weekend on Packer and Durham.
All right. When we come back, you know if there's good, there's bad. And we found it.
Yeah, there's
we've identified it.
Yep.
So we go from best to worst. All that ahead of 9 o'clock. Oof. Wes Moore, the NC State women's coach, joins us in about 30 minutes on Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Monday. All right, we just gave you the best of the weekend. Unfortunately, we've got some on the other side. The worst of the weekend, right? 21 was a hot number, right? 21 was a hot number of positives because we had NC State wrestling 21 straight, Florida State men's basketball at home 21 straight, me working for Century 21 in the first hour, and now 21 appears again, Wes. 21 appears, unfortunately, it's a negative. It's the worst of the weekend.
Ooh, Jackets. 21 straight road losses. To ranked teams.
Yeah.
Mm.
That's going to end here soon.
Not good.
That's going to end here soon. This team's playing too good, man. They got a chance.
Yeah, they're playing well, aren't they?
Yep. Got a chance.
They are playing well. I tell you this, the other thing, too, this is a two-point game. Georgia Tech had a nice lead. Virginia goes on a run to win it at the end. Seth mentioned the bucket by Kihei Clark. Moses Wright was good. Alvarado was good. They're sneaky. They got a little bit more of a Josh Pastner's talking about seven guys when he was with us, a couple weeks ago. Playing a couple more than that now. I mean, you know, they're getting some minutes out of other guys, but we'll see how it goes. Georgia Tech, Duke, by the way, this week. That's a big game midweek.
A couple things here. Number one, Moses Wright joined us last week, played well over the weekend. So for my poor Virginia Tech Twitter guy up there, I mean, we're building quite a case about, I mean, get a life, right? That's issue number one.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what I'm going to be interested in, Wes. I know we got stuff to zip through here. After Coach K talking about the free throw disparity and so forth, I am curious, because of the infamous ACC index card, and we already gave you the numbers, just to see what it looks like this week. Just saying.
Okay.
Just saying.
Okay.
I'm not making any comments other than keep an eye on the numbers. Just saying.
All right. Gotcha. Let's go to Clemson. Robert Stack is in the building.
No doubt.
Because Clemson remains an unsolved mystery.
That's exactly right.
Look, this team is too good, and I think they've played really good teams as a result of this little slide coming off the pause. I'm not one of those guys that's are they defending like they were? No, but they played really good teams. This week, Boston College is scheduled. I think they have Duke weekend on the road at Cameron. So Wednesday night, Boston College at home, and then Duke at Duke. So let's see what the Tigers do these next two. Virginia and Georgia Tech knocked the bottom out of it, and they played one of the two best teams in the league on Saturday. So we'll see what Clemson has for us this week.
You could make the case they played the three hottest teams in the league, right? Virginia, Georgia Tech, Florida State. I mean, those three teams are playing. I mean, forget accounting in terms of, hey, who's hot, who's not. I might make the case those are 1, 2, and 3.
Yep. By the way, we have a men's basketball schedule change just as we speak. The 8:53 has just popped in.
How about that?
Let's see. The game, Boston College's basketball game at Clemson and Louisville have been postponed. So BC is on the shelf for one more week. That means that now Wednesday night, a game originally scheduled for March the 3rd, will be played, a 9 o'clock game on Wednesday night featuring Louisville and Clemson.
So the Tigers are going to probably have the 4 hottest teams in the league after COVID, right?
Yeah. And that means that Saturday they still play at Duke at noon. Now Louisville all of a sudden is playing Wednesday night, and then they're going to turn around and play Georgia Tech on Monday night. Actually, Monday afternoon at 2 o'clock on ACC Network is Georgia Tech at Louisville. So let me go through this real quick. And I know we're taking away the segment, but we got breaking news on Packer and Durham.
Breaking news
at 8:54. Georgia Tech, you talk about a schedule. Georgia Tech's going to get Florida State on Saturday at home in a rematch of a game in earlier this year in December. They lost in Tallahassee. And then they're at Louisville Monday afternoon, 2 o'clock.
Play hard.
I told you with – remember I said this about a week and a half ago. At some point, the postponements would have to cycle back, and some teams might have to play 3 in a week. Then we saw Florida State play, what, 3 in six days, something like that, 3 in 7 days?
Yeah.
If we're going to try and get to towards a number, that's going to happen. So there you go. How about that? We'll put some more clarity on that coming up. But that's the. There you have it. Wow, Boston College now. Ooh.
What about Boston College? Listen, they got problems.
That's 2 full weeks, Pac.
Well, I mean,
it's 2.5.
That's not only that, but it's also prior to the pause, Boston College had a problem. So that's not good for Jim Christian, period. Period.
There you go.
All right.
When we come back, we'll tidy up worst of the weekend.
We had such a great
list. Yeah, we're done. We'll tidy it up. I just said when we come back.
So we have to reschedule. We have to reschedule like the ACC is. Is that what you're telling me? We'll try to squeeze it in somewhere else?
Yeah, that's exactly what we're doing. Yes.
Understand.
We're going to reschedule. We're going to get to worst of the weekend. We'll tidy that up. Plus, guess what else? Another big announcement. We hid this one on you. 9 o'clock, Power Hour, Statements, Noles and Cavaliers. Sit tight. Coming back. Monday show of Packer and Durham.
This is the Packer and Durham podcast.